How many of you have seen this series, Baby Reindeer? Based upon a true story, it's actually one of the most successful Netflix series of all times. And again, I say this again, it's not for the faint of heart. It's about trauma and abuse, obsession and stalking. And as I was watching this show, I, as a lawyer, represent perpetrators of these types of crimes. And I've represented a lot of victims of these types of crimes. And I wanted to get somebody on to talk about the psychology. What makes a person want to stalk in this kind of extreme way? And with us to discuss the topic is the nation's top expert, as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Carlos Cuevas. He's a clinical psychologist, professor of criminology and criminal justice, and co-director of the Violence and Justice Research Lab at Northeastern University in Boston. Dr. Cuevas, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, great. Thanks for having me on.
It's like watching a train wreck. It's fascinating, but it's horrifying. What exactly is the definition of stalking?
So, you know, different states will have different laws, but sort of the general definition of stalking is when somebody engages in behavior directed at a specific person, and that behavior would cause sort of a reasonable person to fear for their safety or to suffer substantial emotional distress. And those are sort of the key components of stalking, is the safety fear and the emotional distress piece that really makes it sort of fit that definition.
And are there different kinds of stalkers? I mean, we hear about the celebrity stalkers who think they have a relationship with Harrison Ford, let's say, or maybe a person who dated somebody for a long period of time and won't let go. What are the different types of stalkers?
So there are a number of different types, and a lot of the sort of, when we're talking about different types, is really we're talking about sort of different motivation and sort of psychological sort of aspects to why they engage in stalking. And there's sort of these typologies out there. But it is sort of, in reality, sort of these different sort of groups of people. A lot of them, a large majority of them, are, you know, individuals who've previously been in a relationship with a person and stalk them very often when the relationship has ended, or when sort of they're unwilling to let go of the relationship having ended. And then you have some other individuals who are sort of some of these that you see sort of in the media a little more often, which are individuals who are sort of, you know, sort of in some way kind of delusionally obsessed with somebody, and sort of kind of invent a relationship in their mind with that person, whether it be a celebrity or even somebody else. And really their behavior is really about sort of distorting and an imagined relationship that they have with the person that they are stalking.
And it seems like in this, I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but, you know, it seems like there's, you know, the stalker is a female, and which is interesting. And she shows up at a bar and he's kind to her, kind of feels sorry for her. And, you know, and then, you know, what ensues is some serious stalking. And I think you're talking about this imaginary relationship, and you see her, you know, actually think that she's got a right to get involved in his life. Tell me, what kind of psychology is behind somebody who creates this delusional relationship?
There's a lot of different sort of reasons why somebody sort of gets to a point of engaging in that kind of behavior. For a lot of people, it has to do around sort of, you know, issues around attachment. Some individuals, you know, who have certain mental health conditions may be sort of more likely to engage. There is some overrepresentation for certain types of personality disorders, individuals who have, you know, borderline or narcissistic tendencies. And it's not to say that any of these sort of mental health conditions are the cause for stalking, but they very often sort of, individuals who stalk may sort of be overrepresented in those diagnoses, and they may sort of influence the kind of behavior they engage in. And I think a lot of times one of the things that's difficult is that understanding what those things are leading the individual to stalk are also sort of the ways that you need to sort of think about, well, how is this going to get addressed? And so there's a lot of diversity there in terms of what may be driving the behavior in an individual.
And, you know, I always think of narcissism as someone who, you know, who maybe has a fragile self-esteem, but, you know, doesn't always appear that way on the outside, may appear the opposite. But a person who doesn't really like rejection and perceives rejection even when there is no rejection, but if there is rejection, it's not taken very well. And if you kind of apply that to the show, I mean, in my own amateur psychologist way, it makes sense. So, you know, and here's what I wonder about. So you have a stalker, and the stalker wants attention and wants to be loved or to be adored by the focus of her attentions. But then it turns into hatred, and then it turns into violence, and it turns into destructive behavior, and sometimes even sexual threats. So how do you go from being a person who wants a relationship, has a delusional relationship, to wanting to hurt somebody and maybe even rape or kill them?
So I think the key piece in your question is the part you mentioned about that it being a delusional relationship. It isn't a real relationship. It is a relationship that they have sort of created in their mind. And a lot of when you sort of see those escalation of behaviors, really, for that type of an individual, you're looking now at that individual perceiving rejection, perceiving that they are really not sort of don't have the relationship they think they have or they want to have. And a lot of that is now sort of behaviors that are manifestations of their anger, attempts to control the other person. And so very often that shift accompanies the point at which the victim starts to more clearly set boundaries and try to really end the relationship, where now some of these other emotional aspects, the anger, the control, all those things now start to manifest because there's a fear of this person of losing the individual that they are sort of obsessed with.
Interesting. We're talking to Dr. Carlos Cuevas. He is an expert on this topic of stalking. He's a criminal clinical psychologist and professor of criminology and criminal justice at Northeastern University. If you have a question for him, give us a call. We're going to take a break. 312-981-7200, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. We are talking to Dr. Carlos Cuevas. He's an expert in the issue of stalking, which is a topic in the new Netflix smash hit called Baby Reindeer. I'm going to get Dr. Cuevas on. I'm going to play a little clip from the movie. Jack, want to play that?
I sat there for hours taking it all in, piecing together her whole timeline. Her graduate job, how she got fired for inappropriate behavior with the boss, how she started hanging around outside his house, then falsely reporting him to the police for abusing his disabled child. This other time she attacked his mother in the street, a 4.5-year prison sentence. I had a convicted stalker stalking me. I had a convicted stalker stalking me. I had a convicted stalker stalking me.
So, Dr. Cuevas, I know that you haven't watched the whole thing, but you've watched some of these episodes. And when you're watching this this series, do you see that this is an accurate kind of depiction of what a stalker does?
It's accurate for a particular type of individual, but it's not sort of the more common one. You know, it's in the show, it stems from sort of she's a stranger, it's sort of a brief encounter that kind of sets everything in motion, and that, you know, that's a very much sort of the minority of stalking sort of relationships. Most stalking will be, you know, intimate partners, current or former intimate partners, and acquaintances, so people who are sort of known to the individual. So while the show, I think, depicts a particular type of stalking behavior, it's realistic, but it's not a common one.
And so I refer to stalking as a subset of domestic violence. When you see a stalker who is in the category you're talking about, where a person is in a relationship, maybe a marriage or a close relationship, and then there's a breakup and that person cannot handle that and then starts stalking the former lover, is there usually domestic violence during a relationship like that, or is that not necessarily the case?
It's not necessarily the case, but you will see certain behaviors that sort of would maybe sort of give you pause. Now, there are very often cases where it's a domestic violence relationship, partner violence relationship. The individual decides to leave that relationship and the perpetrator will sort of continue to stalk and follow the individual as sort of an extension of the abusive relationship. But very often when you see some other behaviors that sort of, a lot of times people don't think are sort of clearly problematic in a relationship, a lot of sort of controlling, a lot of supervising the individual, a lot of sort of keeping track, where are they going? Those are the kind of things that sort of start to give you a little bit of pause, and you have to think, well, is this really unhealthy? Is it potentially abusive? And those are the kind of things that will give you pause to think, well, this could escalate to something more serious like stalking. And so I think a lot of those sort of things are those little sort of, you know, clues, little red flags that are the things that later you think, oh, those were things that I maybe didn't realize were indicative of something, of a bigger problem.
And what I see a lot, Dr. Cuevas, is that, you know, at first it might be flattering. And I'll just say, you know, from, you know, a man is showing a lot of attention to a woman and is constantly emailing. And I'm, you know, where are you? I'm worried about you. Here's flowers, you know, calling at work numerous times. And sometimes it's taken as being, wow, this guy really cares about me. And, you know, when you're talking about red flags here, for all our listeners out here who might be in the dating process or might have children who, you know, who are dating and you may be seeing some of this kind of relationship conduct that is alarming. What are some of the bullet points? What crosses the line here? When should people be worried about the conduct of a potential partner?
So I think that's one of those things around stalking that is like sort of so many other sort of relationship issues, which it isn't, you know, the line isn't a clear line. It's this blurry line that you sort of, you know, you're in one side or the other side of it, but the in-between is very blurry. The things you described could just be somebody who is being a nice partner and trying to, you know, express interest in someone. It could be perfectly benign. I think some of the key things that you have to sort of make note of, if the person expresses that some of that behavior is uncomfortable to them, does the other person continue doing it? If the person sets boundaries around what they do or don't want you to do, and that person doesn't respect those boundaries, that's clearly starting to cross the line. So being attentive to somebody, being, you know, sort of, on, you know, sort of being, you know, attentive to them and really expressing interest is great, lovely. A lot of people enjoy that. But as soon as that individual doesn't respect your boundaries, doesn't respect sort of, you know, things that you are not okay with, that's when you're really now leaving the station of, hey, this is somebody who's being charming and interesting and wants to express interest in you, and getting into an area where this is not okay anymore. Because this person isn't respecting my boundaries, isn't sort of, you know, ceasing to do things that I've asked them to not do.
Because if someone really cares about you, they're going to listen to your thoughts and your concerns and your requests. And if
exactly.
They don't, then what you're seeing is not true affection. It's something else. And I think, you know, maybe for parents, it's great to sit down with your kids and talk about that, to talk about how, you know, if you're seeing that kind of love bombing, you're seeing that kind of invasive behavior and you're not comfortable with it, then you say it. And then you enforce it, and then you tell your parents or the school or whoever when you're seeing that kind of behavior, because it escalates. So let's talk about when someone becomes a stalker and does this kind of thing, do they get cured, like by going to jail, or, you know, I want to talk about orders of protection in a little bit, but I mean, once a stalker, always a stalker? Is this something that is a constant in a personality disorder?
That's not the common occurrence. You do have about a third of stalkers have sort of, when they engage in stalking, they have a history of it. So it's not uncommon, but it's not the majority. And sort of curing stalking is a little tricky in terms of that using that terminology, simply because stalking in and of itself isn't sort of a condition, but it's sort of behavior that somebody's engaging in. When we talk about sort of dealing with a behavior is understanding what are the sort of characteristics in terms of the mental health or, you know, any diagnosis they have or personality disorders or sort of, you know, history that led the person to engage in stalking. and really address those things. There's the whole psychology, mental health sort of treatment part of it. And there is, you know, you said you're going to sort of bring up protective orders in a minute. And then there's sort of the criminal justice system remedies for that. And so sort of quote unquote curing stalking is really about understanding why the behavior started and addressing the root causes of the behavior, because that's really sort of how you get to have those individuals not only cease doing it because, you know, they were threatened with, you know, jail time or something, but also address sort of the root issues that is promoting not just the stalking behavior, but probably promoting a lot of other unhealthy relationship habits.
Dr. Quibbs, we only have a minute before I want to take a break, but give me a for instance of what a background could possibly look like. Just, you know, what would be a typical or, a background that happened to someone at, you know, what level or what age, you know, does it matter what economic level the person is in? Like, what could happen to somebody that they could turn into a stalker like this?
I think the tricky thing about that is that we don't have sort of, there's no stalker profile in terms of, okay, this is the type of individual, the type of background. There are certain threads that are in common. Certainly individuals with personality disorder potentially have a higher risk. Certainly a lot of individuals who have had problematic relationships, developmentally, attachment disorders, things like that, potentially are at risk to engage in this behavior. But a lot of it, too, can be situational, including who they were with, how the relationship was, how it ended, their ability to manage rejection, all those other sort of things will then play a role in whether somebody potentially engages in stalking behavior. And so I think one of the difficulties in trying to sort of make sense of this behavior is that because there's just such diversity in terms of how somebody can get to that point, it makes it really hard to not only sort of understand how they got there, but also figure out how to get them to not engage in that behavior with that particular person or in the future again. So it's just such a tricky, sort of challenging, complicated type of offending that I think has never been one that has had a very clear, straightforward sort of approach or solution to it.
And from my representing people in this field, you know, I'm really, it's very interesting because, it kind of cuts across all levels. It cuts across all educational levels, all, money levels. And I see people who I think to themselves, like, they have so much to lose here. They may have to forfeit their firearm and then they can't be a police officer or what have you. And still they are compelled. It's almost like a compulsion I see with them. Not that they can't control it or they shouldn't be able to control it, but I just find that they are willing to give up so much, including their freedom, to engage in this behavior that doesn't seem to have a real purpose. But I want to talk a little bit more about cyber stalking. I want to talk a little bit about when it happens with young people, because I know that's an area that you're studying. Dr. Carlos Cuevas will be back in a minute on the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Carlos Cuevas. He's a psychologist and professor of criminology and criminal justice at Northeastern University in Boston. We're talking about stalking in light of the Netflix series Baby Reindeer. So let's talk about orders of protection. You studied the psychology of this, and you probably studied the effects on the victims. But what should a victim do? Should the victim go and get an order of protection? There's this idea out there that maybe that's not really a good idea to do it. What is your view on it?
So it depends. I think one of the things that you kind of have to keep in mind is that actually reporting this and getting a protective order is actually really difficult for victims to do. The criminal justice system hasn't always been the best at helping victims, and I think this is one of those areas in terms of getting protective orders where that can be really challenging for and someone who's being victimized by a stalker. But there is some evidence that there is some effectiveness to using the protective orders. The issue is also that about half of the stalking offenders actually will at some point violate the protective order. And so it is not really sort of this one and done type situation. It really kind of becomes this process of engaging with the criminal justice and the legal system that is sort of how you then now navigate dealing with a stalker. There is a small percentage, and I think you kind of alluded to this in your question, there is a small percentage of cases where the protective order can potentially sort of escalate the stalker's behavior because they're sort of, you know, angered by it and sort of proceed to sort of become kind of more sort of aggressive in their behavior. That does tend to be more so in cases where there's been a relationship, there's been a history of partner violence, things like that. But it's sort of one of the, you know, kind of one of the tools that victims have to intervene and get the individual to stop their behavior.
And I do advise people to go and get that order of protection because, you know, in some cases it does stop the perpetrator. The perpetrator says, hey, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose my firearm. This is not fun anymore. I'm not doing this. I'm going to stop. And the statistics say that 70% of the time orders of protection are effective. That seems high to me given what I know. But I do tell people to go ahead and get it. And while I'm here, Dr. Cuevas, I just want to give out some information. If you have issues with domestic violence of any type, Illinois Legal Aid, there is a great website, Illinois Legal Aid online, and there you can get a lot of information about orders of protection. There is a click order of protection easy form. There is a Illinois domestic violence hotline number, and then you can always go to 555 West Harrison if you are in the Cook County area. To go, and sometimes they have advocates who will help you through the process. And when you have an order of protection, when you want an order of protection, you're going to need dates and times and specifics about what was done. And when you come to court, you will come to court with all of your evidence to make sure the judge understands that you can back up your allegations. I know that you have done some studies on the issue of younger people having aggressive teenage dating trends. I'm intrigued by that. It was on your website or in the college website. What are we seeing in terms of teen dating these days?
You know, I think one of the interesting things about issues with youth is that a lot of times we think they're sort of just, you know, smaller versions of adults. And really a lot of the dynamics around dating violence with youth is that it looks different than it does for adults. And it is sort of taking place in this state of sort of ever-changing flux just because of the developmental changes that youth go through and how much of that development has to do with learning about relationships and understanding, you know, sort of appropriate relationship behaviors and boundaries and all of those sort of things. So I think the important thing to keep in mind is that it's going to look different than it does for adults. A lot of it, more so than with adults, takes place in the sort of online world in terms of it being more through texting and social media and sort of things of that sort. It tends to also engage, a lot of times, have more sort of controlling, supervising dynamics, sort of, you know, making somebody share their location and being able to track them and things like that. And then there's a lot of components that are in adult relationship that are not part of what you see with youth, you know, cohabitation, sharing finances, things of the sort. And so I think one of the sort of really important things is, as with probably lots of other adolescent-based issues, is really sort of as a parent being able to sort of have sort of have good communication with your kids, be able to have sort of uncomfortable conversation with your kids, because that is the gateway for them to talk about these things and help them see, oh yeah, there are things here that are not okay. If somebody's doing things that are not okay with you, if they're kind of pressuring you to sort of, you know, share your location, talk about that, talk about what's healthy, talk about what's unhealthy, but understand that it may look different than people tend to think intimate partner violence relationships look like. It still can involve violence and still can involve physical harm, but it involves a lot of other things that aren't necessarily as obvious to a parent, sort of just kind of right in their face, if you will.
And I'm seeing a lot more of the cyber stalking, and it's with youth in particular, but it's with adults as well. I've had a few cases in recent history where, you know, there's this spoofing where someone, you know, is not using their own cell phone number. They can go online and find, you know, a cell phone number that these, you know, these horrible messages are coming from, creating accounts, sending messages to the employer, sending messages and threatening family members, because they can go online and find out where your family is, threatening pets, you know, and finding out where you go on vacation. And all of these things become easier when you have an online presence. So, this is becoming much more complicated to stop and to detect. But still, I would say that unless you tell me otherwise, Dr. Cuevas, that order of protection and paying attention to these things is really, really important before it gets out of hand.
It is. And I think the issue with it, sort of the concern about getting out of hand, is the fact that it can be sort of this gradual development that I think a lot of times for victims, it's hard to sort of realize that you're all of a sudden in this situation, and you kind of didn't realize how this person was sort of gradually moving in the direction of going from what seemed maybe just attention and okay behavior to really sort of stalking behavior. And I think the other piece about technology and social media is that it really has become sort of an additional method or tool for individuals who engage in stalking to, you know, engage in their behavior. You know, there's still, you know, that large percentages where it's, you know, in person showing up, following them, things like that. And the electronic methods, the social media, all those things now sort of provide other mechanisms for them to monitor the person, find the person, engage in their stalking behavior. And you're right, it makes navigating this much more complicated, also makes it much more difficult, and I think a lot of ways, a lot more impactful to the victim, that they are now not only worried about their physical well-being, their physical space, but also all the online ways that somebody can sort of be coming after them.
Absolutely. That's your money and your family and your pets and everything that matters to you. And that's kind of where the targets are that I see. Dr. Cuevas, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Carlos Cuevas, he is the co-director of Violence and Justice Research Lab at Northeastern University in Boston. Thanks for joining us. Take care.
Great. Thank you for having me on.